We see that, let us know that you're coming to establish yourself as king, is right on the doorstep. And the third thing was, what shall be the sign of the end of the world, the end of the age, the end of this age of grace, when the tribulation period ends and Jesus comes to rule and reign? Now, we've been talking about the third question. What shall be the signs of the end of the age? And we're not in this period yet, but we're getting there. We're in the beginning of sorrows, and the earthquakes are increasing. The volcanic eruptions are increasing. Now, I showed you this chart that shows different volcanic eruptions. Mount St. Helens, Mount Katmai, Mount Krakatoa, Mount Tambora, which was the greatest eruption of all time, and Mount Mazama. Now, you notice this one put out 42 cubic kilometers of ejecta. This one put out 12 cubic kilometers of ejecta. This one put out 18 cubic kilometers of ejecta. This one put out 80 cubic kilometers of ejecta, Tambora in 1815. Mount St. Helens didn't even put out anything, hardly. It was a side blast. And I showed you, whenever a volcanic eruption occurs, if it has a vertical blast, it has no choice but to do this. Now, Don and I were meteorologists, and I don't think if you're a child of God and you're a meteorologist, you can't help but see God's hand in creation. When God made the Earth's atmosphere that surrounds it, he put a layer up above the lower level, tropopause level. This is the tropopause down here. He put this troposphere, which is a dividing line. This is the troposphere here, and he put the tropopause, which is a dividing line, between the troposphere and the stratosphere. Now, there's a fair amount of moisture below the tropopause down in the troposphere, and so whenever you have a volcanic blast, the smoke down here doesn't last too long because the moisture condenses on the little tiny smoke particles, and they fall out and go back to the earth. But once you blow it above the tropopause level, there's virtually no moisture up in the stratosphere. And so these cloud particles remain up there for periods of time, anywhere from 1 year to 5 years. They stay up there a long time because there isn't any moisture for them to condense on. The jet stream runs right along just below the tropopause. So it picks up these cloud particles and moves them around just like it does clouds on a day when you can see scattered clouds around and you can see the wind moving them. Now, this shows three different tropopauses. There's one in the polar area, very low, one mid-latitude, a little higher, and one in the tropics, which is much higher. But everywhere you look up, you've got a tropopause above you, where suddenly the temperature at some point starts to increase. When it does, it forms like a shield and will not allow moisture to pass through it, unless there is a tremendous blast from beneath that forces it mechanically, dynamically, to push through the tropopause leaf. Perhaps the heaviest polluters of the stratosphere are volcanic eruptions, lofting an ash cloud laden with sulfur dioxide perhaps 12 miles. A major eruption can shroud an entire hemisphere in a veil of particles that reduce the sunshine and lowers ground temperature. Once aloft, the high-altitude pollutants are assured a long stay. Unruffled by the weather and vertical air mixing of the troposphere, the stratosphere is cleansed by only one circulation pattern. While strong east-west winds blow the air of the stratosphere around the globe, a liquid horizontal drift gradually carries both ozone and pollution toward the poles. If what was causing the ozone layer to break down was fluorochlorocarbons released by sprays and an air conditioning unit, then the first ozone hole would have appeared at the North Pole, because over 74% of all pollutants, fluorochlorocarbons, are released in the industrial north, where you have most of your air conditioning and different types of mechanical apparatus that reduce it. But it appeared at the South Pole. Why? Because that's where the majority of volcanic eruptions are, in the southern hemisphere, particularly in southern South America, and there is an active volcano, Mount Erasmus, or, I can't think of the name of it, and right in the middle of the Antarctica, the South Pole. Now, Erebus. Now, whenever the actual volcanic eruption occurs, such as this one on St. Vincent, you can see how the cloud plume went up above the into the stratosphere. Now, Don and I used to do these charts all the time. These lines are called contours, and they are equal lines of equal height. And whenever you analyze a map and you draw these lines, the wind flow goes right along between these contours like this. This is very high level up in the stratosphere. goes around and it follows that pattern just like this. In other words, the wind would be directly from the west here, southwest here, northwest here, south here, and north over here. Now, this right here is this same cloud plume you see here. Started off down here, and as the whole set, these pressure systems move, lines of equal height, and as they move, the wind that's blowing the cloud at that time, as the whole system moves, carries it. You can see where this cloud plume went, and you can see how much it spread out. During the tribulation period, you're going to have these clouds form all over the earth. This is an article, as fallout from angry volcanoes spread. Volcanic soot and acid vapor from recent eruptions around the world are choking the Earth's atmosphere. The most devastating recent event occurred at El Chocón. Now, it shows these cloud plumes, and it shows how they're mixing, and it shows how they're moving. We've had all kinds of articles. Monster crowd has scientists in awe. A huge crowd of volcanic debris stretching 13,000 miles across two oceans with the potential for altering the Earth's climate for atmospheric scientists has atmospheric scientists buzzing with excitement. Its size, dimension, and location, more than 13 miles above the planet, have particularly piqued the interest of science. The crowd already has reduced sunlight, particularly over Hawaii, and appears on the satellite pictures of the grayish-white haze. This eruption was due to several different eruptions in the southern hemisphere. And the one we're most familiar with, the most recent devastating eruption, the most in some time, was the Mount Pinatubo eruption that blew this smoke cloud clean up through the tropopause level into the stratosphere. According to Dr. Larry Stowe, an atmospheric scientist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the cloud continued to spread out from the tropics, reaching from about 30 degrees north latitude down to about 50 degrees north latitude at the time this is written. The most serious long-term effect of the cloud is likely to be increased destruction of the ozone layer. The aerosol particles in Pinatubo's cloud made the chlorine from man-made fluorocarbons to become more active. Within the cloud from El Chocón eruption, ozone was depleted by 10 to 15%. You can see how the cloud spread out. This is from the Pinatubo eruption. This was the ozone hole in 1983 at the South Pole. Here's South America here, and here's Antarctica, and here's the South Pole. You can see how it increased in size in 1985. In 1991, you can see how it still continued to increase. It was because volcanic eruptions have been continuously increasing. Whenever the eruption first occurred, it occurred right here. And it began to spread in the stratosphere in this direction. Above the troposphere, above the tropopause. The winds don't go from west to east. They normally go from east to west. And it spread out, as you can see, from here all the way across to here. That was week 4, this is week 6, and this is week 12. You can see it had circled the entire globe. Now, during the tribulation period, what you're going to have is this. You're going to have thousands and thousands and thousands of volcanic eruptions, brand new ones. The old ones are going to activate and new ones are going to pop up. They're going to be down the middle of the Atlantic Ridge, coming up above the water surface, shooting this carbon dioxide and all the other different chemicals into the atmosphere. Sulfur, hydrochloric acid, all sorts of different parameters that eat ozone molecules. Now, it's not going to just be on the ocean seafloor. It's going to be all over the earth on land also. Now, this is what you're going to have. You see here the earth, and you see all of these volcanic eruptions. The portion that you see in yellow above the tropopause is going to just keep increasing and increasing and increasing. You can see that there are gaps in between it now. At this particular point in the tribulation period, this is not the end of the tribulation period. This diagram would represent a time which probably somewhere about 6 months before the end. We've still got some gaps in here where a person on Earth could look up, no matter where he was, and could see the sun, moon, and stars. But a lot of times, as these clouds drifted and were carried, when he looked up, all he'd see is just a dim outline. He wouldn't be able to see the sun, moon, and stars clearly all the time. So what I've shown you here is what I believe will happen in the tribulation period. I believe that it will continually keep increasing in number and frequency of volcanic eruptions, and gradually and slowly, just like a Hebrew scroll, this cloud shroud will be formed around the earth, and by the end of the tribulation period, nobody will be able to see the sun, moon, and stars at all. Now, this is where it all began. Revelation 6:12. When Revelation 6:12 occurs, on the opening of the sixth seal, that's when trouble really begins. That's when the last 3.5 years of the tribulation period began. And now the elder had opened a sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. doesn't mean that the sun wasn't detectable. It would be like looking at the sun through about five or six negatives, photographic film negatives. You could still see it. It would be a real fuzzy white ball. And it said the moon became as blood. That's a simile. It doesn't mean it turned into blood. It means it became blood red in color. Verse 14, and the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. Now, we're going to be talking about that in just a moment, and you'll see why I'm so convinced that what I'm teaching you is the truth. Every mountain and island removed out of their place. That's when it all starts. Now, it continues all the way down through the next seal, which is the seventh seal, then seven trumpets, then after that are seven vials of wrath. Here is the last vial of wrath, the final act in the tribulation period, the final earthquake. Revelation 12 and 6 is the first earthquake. Revelation 16 and 18 is the last earthquake. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. At this time, nobody will be able to see the sun, moon, and stars because the cloud shroud will have completely filled in at the troposphere level. And above it, you'll have a continuous cloud, and you won't be able to see the sun, moon, and stars at all. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from throne saying, it is done. The action is completed. The final earthquake is taking place. Revelation 16, 16 through 20. Revelation 18, there were voices, phonos, noises, and thunders, and lightnings. There was a great earthquake. This is the final earthquake in the Jordan River Valley. But it was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And every island fled away, means moved horizontally, and the mountains were not found where they previously were because they had moved horizontally because the whole tectonic plate structure had shifted. Now, these volcanic eruptions are going to be immense. There are going to be thousands and thousands of them. Most people think I'm crazy, but I'm not. Of course, crazy people don't think they're crazy. But the truth is, this is going to fill in the stratosphere, and it's going to cause a continuous cloud shroud. This is the Kamchatka eruption peninsula in Siberia. This is a volcanic eruption that occurred there. You can see it almost looks like E.T. It's got two eyes and a mouth. One woman said that was the devil hour where I was doing these lectures one time. I told it was E.T. She just didn't know. Now, we're going to take a look at some things here. And we're going to start off, and what we're looking at are scriptures that tell us how... I'm going to go over here. Are you all getting a ringing? Are you getting a ringing when I'm speaking? Can you hear a little bit of ringing? Okay. You still awake, Ben? Ben's the only one nodded her head. Oh, let me get back. See, somebody tries to do you a favor and you just treat them awful. I'm going to turn this up just a little. Hope that ring will go away. How about now? Now's the ring there? I don't hear it now. I'd like to get a little higher if I could. 1, 2, 3, 4. How about now? Is it there? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All good children go to heaven. When they get there, they will yell. Rosemary Henry went to Yale County Fair. Okay, now let's look at these scriptures. We start off, and it is initially forming. At first, you can detect the moon and the stars, but you have a change. Luke 21, 25. This is the tribulation period, the last 3.5 years. Verses 25 and 26 tell you the events that are occurring. This is when all hell breaks loose. This is from the opening of the sixth seal, through the trumpets, and through the vials. And there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring. Men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. The powers of heaven shall be shaken. When it says there shall be signs in the sun, the moon, and the stars, what does it mean? Normally, you go out, and if there aren't any clouds, you see the stars at night. If there aren't any clouds, you see the sun in the daytime. You see the moon at night. This is telling you that there's going to be a change. Some things are going to appear differently in the heaven than they have appeared normally up to the end of the tribulation period. When it talks about the sea and the waves roaring, it's talking about tsunami waves generated by the movement of these tectonic plates, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. Men's hearts failing them for fear, for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. When a person goes out during this last part of the tribulation period and looks up at the sun, moon, and stars, he's going to see some things that he never saw before. They never quite looked like that. And this is culminated after the end of the 3.5 years, at the very end of the tribulation period. Verse 27, and then shall they see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. The cloud that he comes in is that cloud that is formed in the stratosphere. Later on, we're going to talk about how every eye on the earth will see him come through it simultaneously at the same moment. Now, here's where we started. Revelation 6:12. And I beheld, and he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. This is what starts it in the sixth chapter of Revelation. At this time, the cloud plume in the stratosphere, when it is between you and the sun or the moon or the stars, won't be thick enough to completely blot out the sun. It says, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair. If you've ever looked at the sun through clouds that are not thick enough to completely blot it out, you will notice the sun is a black blotch. That's what sackcloth of hair is, black sackcloth of hair. But you can still see it. And the moon became as blood. It doesn't mean the moon you couldn't see at all. It means looking through the cloud shield, it takes on a blood-red color. There's no more effective lithometer in all the lithometers that God created than a volcanic lithometer to turn the moon into a beautiful red color. Revelation 8. Now we're getting down a little further on. Notice we started Revelation 6. This is when the cloud starts to form. But it's fairly thin at that time. Now, two chapters later in Revelation 8, we're on the fourth angel sounding. We've already had the first angel sound his trumpet. Well, we had the last seal, the seventh seal, had an earthquake then. Then we had the blowing of the first trumpet. We had all the green grass burnt, a third of the trees. Then in the second angel sounded his trumpet, we had a great burning mountain of volcanic eruption in the midst of the sea. Then on the third trumpet, we had wormwood coming down and plummeting and spreading across the earth. And now by this time, in Revelation 8:12, two chapters after the beginning, this is the problem. And the fourth angel sounded, a third part of the sun was smitten, and a third part of the moon, and a third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. If God hadn't put this last phrase in, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise, we could not possibly have interpreted this correctly. It doesn't mean that God is going to, boom, knock out a third of the sun. It doesn't mean that, boom, God is going to knock out the third part of each star. It doesn't mean, boom, God is going to knock out the third part of the moon. It means the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. It means that a third part of the time at night, all over the earth, most people will not be able to see the moon or the stars. A third time of the night during the day, a third time of the day, people will not be able to see the sun. You see, at this point, in the eighth chapter, there are still breaks in this cloud. And there will be times when breaks will occur as the cloud moves around certain areas, and they will be able to see the sun, moon, and stars. But a third of the time, they won't. So it's thickening at this point. I had one fellow tell me, Brother McElmurray, this thing is just too plain. It just fits too well. And it was almost like it couldn't possibly be this way. It has to be this way. Because everything in there fits perfectly the way God made the atmosphere and the earth and volcanic lithometers. Revelation 9:9. Now we're moving to the next chapter. The cloud shroud is going to thicken even more. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from the heaven of the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. This is Hekles Tupriatos Tesebisu. You have a heavenly being come down from heaven, I believe an angel, and God sends him, and he has the authority to unlock the bottomless pit. May well be Michael, the archangel. I don't know which one. But this angel comes, and he opens the earth, because the earth is the bottomless pit. There are many different types of figures. You have old squares like this pulpit, rectangles like the Lord's Supper table. You have prisms, you have triangles, and they all have bottom. But an oblate spheroid like the earth does not have a bottom. If you start digging on one side, you'll go through the center of it, no bottom, and you'll come out on the other side. So the earth is the bottomless pit. And when he opens it up, then you're really going to see an intensification and a tremendous thickening of the cloud shroud above the tropopause in the stratosphere. And he opened the bottomless pit, the abyssu priatos, shaft abyss is what it means. Those are shaft abysses that go down into the earth. And there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. This is when it really starts to thicken up. By this time, it's almost closed, but not quite. Here is where it is finally closed. Now remember, in Revelation 16:16, it says, and he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. That's the battle of Armageddon. And at that time, that's when the Jordan River Valley rips open. That's when the last vial of wrath is poured out. And so he's going to tell you what it will look like when you look up to see the sun, moon, and stars into the heavens. He's going to tell you what you'll see. Joel 3:11. Assemble yourselves and come all ye heathen and gather yourselves together round about thither, cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there will I set to judge all the heathen round about. Here he comes. Jesus is returning to judge them. This is when the Son of Man returns, and every eye shall see. He says, put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Joel 3:13. Come get ye down, for the press is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. This is when he opens that crack in the crust of the earth for 1,600 furlongs, 185 miles from the Gulf of Aqaba northward to where the Jezreel Valley branches off of it. This is where that great wine press, Lanos, filled with blood, destroys 5/6 of the Antichrist army. Here they are, multitudes, multitudes, in the Valley of Decision. God's about to destroy them. For the day of the Lord is near in the Valley of Decision. When that valley rips open, that's the final great earthquake, and you are going to have smoke coming up out of that all over the earth like you've never seen, and it is going to completely blot out all the heavenly bodies from the people on this earth, because it will be so thick, nobody will be able to see through it anywhere. But remember, we're talking way up above the topaz level. The sun and the moon shall be darkened. You won't be able to see it anywhere. And the stars shall withdraw their shining. You will not be able to see a star anywhere. That cloud shroud will be continuous around the entire earth by the end of the tribulation period. You say, well, what's going to eliminate it? That's an interesting question, and maybe I'll get to that eventually. So what I've said is this. You start off in the tribulation period, probably, let's say this is about the 8th, Revelation 8, where you have the 4th trumpet go off. You've already had the plate start to ship back in chapter 6, in Revelation 6:12. And let's say you're standing right here. Now let's say that we're going to freeze this right here, and that's where you're standing, and this is the way it looks right now, where you are. You'd be able to look up, and you'd be able to see the sun, moon, and stars, because there are no clouds above it. Now let's remember that all these are moving. Actually, they're moving from east to west, but it really doesn't matter. They're moving. Now what would happen if you were standing here, and all the winds are blowing, and these clouds are moving? Okay, the first thing would happen is, the leading edge of any cloud is almost invariably thin. And that is particularly true of these lithometic clouds. So when you look through this leading edge in the daytime, at least in the initial stages, the sun would take on, it would look like a black blob kind of shining around the outer perimeter of it. But you'd still be able to see it. The moon looking through the cloud and the lithometers in between, being thin in nature, the sun would turn black, but the moon at night would turn a beautiful blood red. So then this cloud would move on over you, the thicker part being back here. Then as it moved on over, and this part back here, the thick part came over you, you would not be able to see the sun at all. You would not be able to see the moon and the stars at night. So what have I told you? I've told you that about a third of the time, you wouldn't be able to see them at all. But sometimes, the sun would take on a black color, and sometimes the moon would turn blood red, which is just exactly what the Bible says. Then just as soon as the backside of this cloud moved around, and you got another little break come over you, then you would be able to see the sun, moon, and stars again. So about a third of the time you could see them. About two-thirds of the time you couldn't. Sometimes the moon would be blood red. Sometimes you wouldn't be able to see it at all. Sometimes the sun would be black as sackcloth of hair, but sometimes you wouldn't be able to see it at all. But by the end of the tribulation period, particularly with the final great earthquake in the Jordan River Valley, this is what the earth would look like. There would be a complete cloud, shroud of volcanic smoke. I'm going to tell you something. There are a lot of reasons I go and do these lectures. I do them because I'm convinced God means for me to. There's no question in my mind about it whatsoever. But a man can be wrong about a lot of things, and I know that. But I'm not wrong about this. I'm old and I'm tired. And last week I had a terrible week. I was sick all week, took antibiotics, allergy pills. You don't know what it's like, and I'm not taking out my frustrations on you or anybody. This is getting tougher and tougher for me to do, but let me tell you why I do it. The Lord has convinced me that what I'm showing you is true. There's no question in my mind about it. Just about every one of our preachers, well, not everyone, but a whole lot of our preachers believe that we're going to be whisked out of here at the first of the week. They have a right to teach that, and they have a right to believe that. Last week, Norm went over and bought one of my rapture tapes. And I saw him buy it. He was a preacher. He was an older preacher. Most of the older preachers have taught that for so long, they're never going to change their mind. Never. So when I saw him buy it, I didn't want the man to pay for the tape and be disappointed. So I said, "Brother, listen, you may not like that." He said, "Why not?" I said, "You may not like what I believe about the rapture." He said, "Well, why not?" I said, "I'm not a first to the weaker." He said, "Well, I'm not looking at this tape then." And he went and put it back. Now, that's their right, and that's their privilege. But here's why I do this lecture. And it's not just them, it's for you also. You may not believe all this, but I guarantee you, there's going to be a lot of people here that didn't believe this. And when it happens, they'll believe it. And it's not a question of me taking out my spite on them and saying, "Aha, then I'll be justified." It'll help them. There are a whole lot of people that are convinced we're not going through any part of the tribulation period. I love them and I care for them. They may not believe us now, but I guarantee you, when all this starts to break loose, we're going through the trumpets. And that crowd shroud is going to be formed. And when all this hell breaks loose, God's children are still going to be here. But I can't do anything except present it to people. But the reason I do is because I really feel sorry for those people who are going into this unprepared. Their preachers have convinced them they're going to be whisked out of here at the first of the week. And I love these brothers. They don't think I do. They think I'm trying to do them harm. But they better wake up, because we're going to be held accountable to God for what we taught and for how we taught it. And there are a lot of people in our work that won't even consider anything but the first of the week. And they think that has been taught from the beginning of time. And it hasn't. So when all this begins to occur, you're going to get more and more and more volcanic activity. You're going to start off in Revelation 6:12 with the moon taking on a blood red color and the sun black as sackcloth of hair. By the time the last earthquake occurs in the Jordan River Valley, the pouring out of the last vial in Revelation 16:18, you're going to have that cloud shroud completed. Now let's talk about some words, and let's talk about what they mean. At the heaven, this is Revelation 6:14-17. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. This is when the action first begins. This is the initial stage of the formation of the cloud shroud. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. Every single mountain, every single island firmly impregnated into these tectonic plates begins to change their latitude and longitude, of course. Around the periphery of these plates, all hell breaks loose. Tremendous volcanic eruptions pouring up into the stratosphere. It begins to form the cloud. We're still going to be here. Now, look, I hope by now you've become convinced that I wish it was another way. But I only wish it was this way because that's the way God made it, and God knows what he was doing. Now, what is the heaven? Well, when you go out in the daytime, and this was the same thing to a Hebrew, and you look up in the sky, and you see the sun and the blue sky around it, and the scattered puffy clouds, you say, "Behold the heaven of God." Now, actually, we're three heavens. The Bible defines the first heaven as our atmosphere, where the birds fly, and where we have a troposphere, a stratosphere, an ionosphere. But then the second heaven is defined as the heaven where the sun, moon, and stars and fixed constellations exist, what we call outer space. And the third heaven is the heaven where God dwells. And all three of those heavens have the same word, Uranos. That's Uranos. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. So it means on the earth, we stood here, and we look up, and the heaven is the sun in the daytime, and the blue sky are just the sun, are just the clouds that you can see if the sun's blotted out. And then there is outer space. But it doesn't really matter whether there are three heavens or not here, because this is a very simple thing. You just look up, and what you see is supposed to be what you would call heaven, which would include the sun, moon, and stars and constellations. It's what you see when you look up. Now let's take a look at a scroll. Because whatever this is, it departed as a scroll. This is a Hebrew scroll used during bar mitzvah. And this is a young Hebrew boy at a make-a-wish bar mitzvah. Here's the scroll that you see right here. He's looking down on it, and he's reading it. This is what they wrote on it. And they still practice this custom. This is exactly what a scroll looks like. Now, when it says, the heaven departed as a scroll when it's rolled together, it does not mean that these two things rolled together and all of a sudden the scroll vanished. It disappeared. Doesn't mean that at all. The scroll was what was written on it. And so it wasn't the whole scroll that vanished. It was what was written on the scroll. I can read this up here. It's in Hebrew. Now, if I roll this together, what disappears? The writing. That's what the scroll was, the writing. And so the writing disappears when it's rolled together. Now, this pictures you rolling a scroll together, your eyes fixed on the print, and the print disappears. The Lord says the heaven, you look up and you see the moon and stars at night. You're watching them. All of a sudden, they slowly disappear. It's not done quickly. These scrolls, you have to keep rolling and rolling and rolling and rolling. And finally, on the last page, the writing disappears. So this indicates it happens slowly. It's not something that you just very quickly put together. So we're talking about the disappearance of the writing on the scroll. Now let's talk about the word departed. I don't even have to pull out my Koine Greek on you here and tell you that's past tense. It is, but even in English, it's past tense. It's talking about the heaven. It's talking about the way it disappears, slowly goes out of view, the writing on a scroll. Now, this describes how. This describes how it disappears, slowly, as a scroll. The heaven describes what disappears, sun, moon, and stars. Departed tells you it's something that happened while you were watching it. Okay, I'm about to depart, but I haven't departed. I am still in the act of departing, but I have not departed. You can still see me. Now, I still haven't departed. I departed then, and you couldn't see me. Now, I went through all that because I want you to see how accurately God has put this thing together and how it fits together like a glove. I think God's word is remarkably plain that we've just had a great deal of difficulty in sorting it out because in man's running to and fro, while knowledge has increased, we just in the past weren't able to understand what these scriptures meant. And I don't believe that God meant for any generation to understand it except the last one because we were the only ones going to be here. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And this describes what it's going to be like. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men hid, and every bondsman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and rocks of the cave of the mountains. When you start this chapter, or these verses, the opening of the sixth seal, God gives you a preview of coming attractions. In the next few verses, he's going to tell you what's going to be going on during the earth during the tribulation period. He's going to tell you how it's going to be from the time it first starts, when the tectonic plates start to move, every mountain and island moves out of places, and how it's going to get worse and worse and worse. It's like when you used to go to the movies and you'd see a preview of coming attractions that would give you an overall view of what the movie was going to be about. That's what he does in these next few verses. So it describes all the events that go through the rest of the tribulation period in a short capsular form. And the kings of the earth and the great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondsman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and rocks of the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. This is a preview of the coming attractions where eventually toward the tail end, God's wrath is going to be poured out into seven vials of wrath. For the day of his wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand? Joel 2:30-31. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. That's the blood of the earth. That's the fire of the earth. That's the smoke that comes up out of volcanic eruptions. Verse 31. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. Revelation 6:12. And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun and the moon became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. That's a simile. That's when it all starts. Joel 2:10. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shine. So God has made things very clear in his word about what he intends to do. And the only reason I keep doing these lectures is because, I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like a know-it-all. And I don't mean to sound like Mr. Superman. I'm just a poor little simple nerd from Dardanelle, Arkansas, who who was born a sinner and who will die a saved sinner by the grace of God. But I do want people to believe this, because if you believe this, when it happens, it'll be a whole lot easier to deal with. And we've got hundreds and hundreds of churches, Missionary Baptist churches, that the pastors have convinced them that we're going to be whisked out of here at the first of the week. And they're positive of it. And they're wrong. And when all this starts, those people are going to be in absolute confusion, because they are going to believe, oh, what's happening? Maybe I'm not saved. Maybe I wasn't taken. It's going to cause mass confusion. I hope our preachers wake up before the end time and realize that the first of the week position was a teaching that was introduced in 1827 by the Plymouth Brethren, propagated by John Darby, and really solidified when it was put in the Scofield Bible. It is incorrect. Now, I used to say, well, you know, that's fine. Believe whatever you want. And you can and you will, and I can't change that. But you better wake up and realize that you don't have much time. And when this starts, if you don't believe me now, I guarantee you will then. So what I've shown you is this, figure 12. I've shown how it starts with the smoke accumulating above the tropopause level. I've shown how it finally ends up in figure 14. And I've shown the scroll and the writing that disappears. Now the next thing I'm going to show will be how it can possibly be that all over the earth, at times when it should be midnight, there's light. I'm going to describe and show you how things are going to appear quite different at the end of the tribulation period. But it's quarter till, so I'm going to cut this out right now. And we'll begin right here. And I will also explain how every eye will be able to see Jesus when he returns.